Okay, welcome to episode 15 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I am Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today I have Luis Giannone, who is a PhD student in the political science department at the University of Notre Dame and specializes in IR theory, international political economy, and foreign policy analysis with a focus on Latin America. So, Luis, thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure.
Now, you recently published a piece in the Monkey Cage blog, which, for those of you listening who don't know, it's really a key blog outlet for political scientists that's now published for the past several years by the Washington Post. And that was based on an article you did with a couple of co-authors for an article in Latin American Politics and Society about Chinese influence in Latin America, which had caught my attention. Now, this is a hot topic now, though it's been discussed for quite a long time. Interestingly enough, there's a lot of disagreement about it. Now, in the Latin American Politics and Society article, is it fair to say that you argue that the Chinese state intentionally increases its economic influence where U.S. economic influence has declined? Is that an accurate way of assessing your argument?
Yes, Greg. That definitely is one of the things that we find. Our main argument, though, is rather than the Chinese state increases its economic influence or enacts this economic statecraft in areas of Latin America where the U.S. has less political influence. We make a broader argument, including not just the economic indicators like foreign direct investment or trade that the U.S. has with these Latin American countries, but also some political indicators like USAID that we regard in some context as a political thing, and also the convergence in the voting in the UN General Assembly between the individual Latin American countries and the U.S., and that's more like political convergence rather than economic influence. So
okay.
I think you can make both arguments, and it works in different analysis that this happens where the U.S. has less economic influence, but also where the U.S. has less political influence. Yeah.
Okay, and where is this in Latin America? Is this just your typical left-wing government, right-wing government? Is that where China is choosing to go?
Well, it could be to a certain extent. So we have variation in U.S. economic influence in different countries, and that's in the article. People might find that variation sort of in different graphics that may help to see this more structural and big picture trends. But also there is small variation in each of these countries. And what we find is that even in a country that you would find or I would find very close to the U.S., when the U.S. withdraws to a certain extent, China tries to chime in. So in a way, this, I think, happens in the two types of country, like in the Venezuela kind of country, but also in the, say, Chile kind of country in Latin America.
Okay, and how would we measure withdrawal? Like, say, if the U.S. withdraws, how do we measure that?
Basically, what we do is we take these indicators that I mentioned. So we have foreign direct investment and in trade, in exports and imports, and then we have the economic aid, military aid, both coming through USAID through different agencies, and then we have this convergence. So imagine in 2003. You have a score of 10 for country A, and then in 2004 you have a score of 8. Then you would see a withdrawal, what we would call a withdrawal or a decline of 2 points in these indicators. That would be the more or less the methods. Yeah.
Okay. And is this something? This kind of gets to the monkey cage article. Is this something the U.S. government should be concerned about?
Well, I don't think it's something that should be big concern, because I think the point in that article was exactly that, that many other media outlets like The Economist and others have been telling a much more gloomy story about what may happen after the U.S. election. And I think our point is this is something that has been happening for a long time, and this is something that surely the U.S. should be looking at, but it can be problematic, but it can be not. The way we put it in our article is we differentiate between two types of strategy. We say this could be a strategy of what we call accommodation or a strategy of what we call contestation. Basically, in our minds, a strategy of accommodation is a strategy where China goes to that country where the U.S. Has already withdrawn because of a decision made in Washington, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So if the case is that China is going into, say again, Venezuela, because the U.S. is not investing in Venezuela because of a decision made by U.S. agents, I mean, both private and the government, then we don't see as much of a problem because the counterfactual would be that whenever the U.S. goes into again, China would go away, the agency would be in the hands of the U.S. In a way. But what we cannot discard in our research, though, is that China might be enacting a contestational strategy, which would seem like China going into a country and because of that, giving the government the capability to enact certain policies and then threaten U.S. assets, and then the U.S. is going away. So if that is the case, I think, yes, that should concern the U.S. government to a certain extent. And we cannot say whether that is or is not the case in our particular research. So in that would matter further research, probably looking inside each of these countries for the details of these dynamics.
Right. I tend to be a non-alarmist, but obviously it's very easy to come up with an alarmist position as, there's a million articles written about this that assume contestation.
Yeah.
But your point is that contestation is not automatic.
Exactly. And or at least we cannot infer it from our data. I mean, people may see particular cases of contestation in particular countries, but our argument is broader, and we try to look to the whole of Latin America from 2002 to 2014. And so with that big picture, we cannot tell. I mean, China is contesting the U.S. hegemony in the region. I would emphasize we cannot tell. So it's not that it's not happening.
Right. You talk about both U.S. withdrawal, but also U.S. agency. Is this the sort of thing where if the U.S. did more, traded more, that would change the situation? Or is there anything that the U.S. government can even do?
Well, put it that way, I think, yes. If the U.S. had, I think, a more important economic presence in the region, that would imply, given our findings, that China would have less opportunities to influence these countries to a certain extent. The thing is, the U.S., that those are, there are other things I would say that the U.S. can do with respect to this particular situation that are more easily doable. Like, for instance, starting monitoring these trends and try to have some type of coordination with China in the case that the U.S. is aware of these trends and the fact that the Chinese state itself is promoting this type of investments commercial relations with countries that are away from the U.S. I think the most important first step from Washington should be try to coordinate this process with China in case the U.S. government assesses, as we do, that this is taking place.
Okay. Yeah. And some things, though, China is doing that the U.S. wouldn't want to do, for example, loan enormous amounts of money to countries like Venezuela and Ecuador, which I think China already right now is not very happy at the amount of money that it that has already loaned to Venezuela.
Yeah, I agree. And
So what, I know this goes a little bit beyond the scope of your work, but do we have any sense at all what are Chinese strategic aims? I mean, what sorts of things are they doing? Is it just primary products that they're buying, or what do they seem to want?
Well, that is also, as you said, is beyond this particular research, but from talking with my colleagues, and this is another interesting feature that I should mention from this research, that it's made by mostly Latin Americans and in Latin American institutions. So I'm the one who is here in Notre Dame, but the other three people are either Argentines or Brazilians, and most of the work has been done in the University of Sao Paulo. So it gives a specific sort of perspective, Latin American perspective to this subject. And what we see, I mean, because this also has to be with each country's experience and all, is that the Chinese objectives in the region may vary greatly depending on each particular country. And they may vary from very high aims to very low aims. I mean, what research in general done in Latin America and Africa finds is that there are very low aims that have to do with basic Chinese legitimacy in the international community that the Chinese have been able to systematically achieve. And those, I think they have been also able to systematically achieve in Latin America. Like, for instance, coordination or convergence in voting in international governmental organizations like the UN General Assembly we were talking before, or voting on human rights issues, or considering China as a market economy, or considering the legitimacy of the One China policy and not recognizing Taiwan or Tibet or those type of things. I think China has been consistently able to get, and those are clear, transparent strategic aims when China looks at Latin America. But then there are other types of aims that go beyond, I would say, legitimacy. And what you have is first economic aids, and China is investing greatly in stuff like infrastructure, and those investments are thought to promote more economic relations with Asia in most cases. Lots of these types of economic engagement we've been talking about are trying to a certain extent change the strategic orientation of these Latin American countries' economies towards Asia. And on the worst case scenario or best case scenario from the Chinese point of view, China could also get some very important strategic concessions that are near or even overly military. Like, for instance, trading in arms, or more specifically in technology related to the space, like missile technology or launching sites, etc., that sometimes are pictured as scientific endeavors, but they have all obviously a military side to it. And so in case, for instance, in Argentina, in my country, China has put forward some of these investments that try to build and develop launching sites and for exploring the space and launch satellites. But, you know, these technologies are very close one to the other. And that may be the type of a strategic aim that we are not considering and China could have. So I think that the range is very broad. We are sure that China is seeking international legitimacy, but on the other hand, it may be seeking other things as well.
And I'm curious, I don't know whether you can answer this question, but you know, you mentioned you're Argentine, right? And you're doing work with Argentines and with work with the University of Sao Paulo.
Yes.
Do you think we'll see any change given that the governments of those two countries moved from the left toward the right? Does that matter now at all?
I think from the political and military perspective, the very last thing we were talking about, it does. I mean, these governments are very much interested in attracting Western capital and also sort of Western legitimacy because of their own constituencies, and so having more, closer relations to the U.S. And so I think in terms of foreign policy, for instance, in general, and in terms of voting in these international organizations, those type of things, I think these governments will tend to align with Washington to a greater extent, although that may be now put into question because of the results of the elections. I think right now both Temer in Brazil and Macri in Argentina should be, if they are not, evaluating to what extent aligning with Trump could have very high legitimacy costs for their governments they are facing elections next year. So it's not that they can easily push something that is very unpopular right now. So we will see. For now, they haven't changed anything. And even Macri seems to be very proud of his personal relations with Trump in the past, and so it looks stable in that aspect. The economic aspect, though, is different. These two governments, I think, they have come to realize that relations with China are very, very important for them economically, and therefore, even if they had a very anti-Chinese sort of approach to foreign policy before coming to government, I'm talking about Macri mostly here. Okay. After the elections, the first big international visit was to Beijing, and Macri went with lots of businessmen, like I think 45, which it was one of the biggest team of businessmen and going to a foreign country in recent years. So I think it has these two sides. On the political side, this country the relations with China may go south to a certain extent, but on the economic side, these governments are very conscious of how much they need China, especially in this particular moment when the economies are going badly.
Yeah. Right. In your Monkey Cage article, you say that Latin American interest has not expanded much beyond economic interaction. And do you get the sense that Latin Americans want broader ties, cultural, et cetera, or is it mostly just economic?
I would say it's mostly economic. And when saying this, I wouldn't say that in the relations from, and I'm talking about the Latin American public in general, I wouldn't say that the situation is much better for the U.S. in Latin America. I think the Latin Americans are first and foremost interested in their own the development and their own economic situation. On the other hand, I do think there is a very important difference between the U.S. and China. One is cultural, and the other thing has to do with the political system. And the Latin Americans, even if that hasn't been a constant during the 20th century and it may change in the future, I think Latin Americans have had a very positive view of liberal democracy during the last at least 25 years or maybe more, 30 years. And that has been relatively consistent. And that, because of that, I think we should expect more sympathies toward the U.S. than toward China. But I mean, both, I think the legitimacy of the US and China vis-a-vis this public opinion depends greatly on the economic issues and how the prospects of developing under the hegemony of one or the other power. Even if, I mean, this I think from the perspective of the public opinion, right?
Yeah. Ed, I think you mentioned that that China's established Confucius Institutes in Latin America, but they may not have a lot of impact. How much does language create a barrier that's very hard for China to get around?
Well, that has been an argument going around. My position in, I mean, that language creates a great barrier. Mm-hmm. My own take on this, but I know one not really to consider in this regard. But I tend to think that that's not a very big issue.
Okay.
I think most Latin Americans don't speak English anyway, so, and it's not that, and at the level of elites, even if in a very short term sort of frame, that may be liability for China. On the other hand, you can get sinologists and people speaking Chinese into the government considerably fast if you need them. So, I don't think that's a very, very important issue, really. But that's, again, the take of someone who doesn't know much about this particular issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Luis, we are out of time. Luis Shannoni is a PhD student in the Political Science Department at the University of Notre Dame. He specializes in IR theory, international political economy, and foreign policy analysis with a distinct focus on Latin America. So make sure you go and take a look at the work that he's just recently published. And Luis, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Ray. It was a pleasure.